So while Dan is setting up, I'll introduce the next speaker. It's going to be Matt Fontaine, who's a graduate student in civil and environmental engineering, speaking on assessing and mitigating drought in Washington State.
Thank you, Dr. Conquest. Good morning. As Dr. Conquest mentioned, my name is Matt Fontaine, and I'm a graduate student here in the civil engineering department. And I'm honored to be here today to talk to you about assessing and mitigating drought in Washington State. Now, this may not seem like the most timely of subjects, given the torrential rains we had this fall, and truly this is one of the greatest challenges that faces drought planners as they try to mitigate drought in the off-season and the non-drought times, is garnering the necessary support and resources to do this sort of work. So hopefully by the end of my talk today, you'll have a better understanding of why it's important to mitigate drought, as well as some of the things that people here in Washington can do to try to adapt and reduce drought impacts in the future. So here's a brief outline of my presentation. I'll start by talking about motivation, why study drought in Washington, and then I'll get into our research methods and address some of the findings of our study, both impacts, who's affected, how much are they affected, as well as ways people can reduce vulnerability in the future. And then I'll wrap up talking about some future work in the field. So motivation for the study, why study drought? Well, agriculture is one of the main economic engines here in Washington State and employs well over 100,000 people, and much of the water that supplies this ag is dependent on surface water supplies. So when drought occurs, you can understand that the impacts to a lot of people and a large portion of the economy can be pretty severe. Washington is also home to several threatened and endangered fish species, and these all depend on stream runoff for various stages of their life cycle. And everyone in Washington drinks water, so obviously we're concerned about having adequate supplies to supply both our drinking needs as well as our recreation, lawn watering, and things like this. And then finally, Washington gets approximately 70% of its power supply from hydropower. So when drought occurs, then this can create essentially an energy shortage if the drought is severe enough. So our study had four main objectives: to look at impacts, vulnerability, indicators, and the type of information people are looking at in order to monitor drought, and then finally, responses, what people can do to reduce drought impacts during future droughts. And I'll focus on two here during our talk, impacts and responses. So our primary research methods were to conduct phone interviews. We talked to over 60 interviewees, water users, as well as agency officials from all the sectors that you can see listed here. And we got our primary contact list from our advisory panel made up of the Department of Ecology, Department of Community Trade and Economic Development, Department of Agriculture, as well as the Office of Financial Management. So as our study proceeded, it became fairly obvious that dividing the state into distinct regions based on unique characteristics was a good way to sort of analyze our data. And you can see the number of interviews in each region that we identified here in parentheses. And distinct features like the Central West is made up of many of the population centers, Everett, Seattle, Tacoma, Olympia. The North Central regions, large amount of agriculture dominated largely by tree fruit growers. And the South Central region is distinct from the North Central in that it houses the Yakima Project, a large system of irrigation canals as well as reservoirs in the Cascades. So now we'll get into the findings of our assessment. And I'll start by going over sectors with kind of a broad brush and point out some specific examples as I go along. In the agriculture sector, the obvious impact is that supplies are inadequate to meet crop demands during many drought years. One of the major impacts is that junior water users, and when I refer to junior water users from here on, I'll be talking about those users in the Yakima Basin with post-1905 water rights. So these are the people who are the first ones to have their water cut off if supplies run short. They received only 42% of their supply in 05, resulting in pretty severe impacts, things like entire fruit crops being lost, reduced cuttings of hay and alfalfa, and things like this. And then dryland production, these are people who are depending primarily on precipitation for their agriculture, reported that in some cases their production was reduced by up to 70%. And here I'll focus on the junior water users. So this graph illustrates the percent entitlements received by junior water users. Now, normal entitlement's about 3 feet. In many of the years, two of the most recent years anyway, they received less than 50%, so about a foot and a half. And then 11 of the past 35 since 1970, they've received less than their full entitlements. And you can see the impacts here in these images, pretty severe. Some dried out fruit and alfalfa, as well as hops. So it can have severe impacts on those who are affected by reduced supply. In the environment sector, we focus mainly on fisheries, and the obvious impact here is that stream flows run low. And this can have impacts on fish species by reducing their habitat. They have less access to side channels and tributaries, as well as decreasing the water quality, high temperature water, higher contaminant loads, which results in increased pre-spawn mortality of those adult fish migrating back upstream, as well as reduced success of juveniles both rearing in the system and migrating out to sea. And an additional impact pointed out by agency officials is that costs were increased during drought years. And I'll focus on pre-spawn mortality here, specifically in the Okanagan River. So you can see this map of Washington here. Here's kind of the area I'm zooming in on with Google Earth. The Okanagan River flows south into Lake Assoyuz. Here's the Canadian border here. And is released as spillwater over the top of the Zilsel Dam in the south end of Lake Assoyuz down into the U.S. Now, on a normal year, any given year, the water in the surface of the lake becomes especially warm due to solar radiation and the like, and the water that's released downstream can be quite high temperature. And during a normal water supply year, tributary input and groundwater influx is enough to cool that downstream water. But during a drought, due to both a higher percentage of agricultural withdrawal as well as just naturally low flows, the water in the Okanagan can become especially warm, resulting in pre-spawn mortality of hundreds of summer Chinook salmon downstream of Lake Assoyuz. So now moving on to the municipal and industrial sector, those who supply water to all of us here in the room, or most of us here in the room. Agency officials from these water suppliers identified three main levels of response. Advisory level, voluntary restrictions, and mandatory restrictions, and associated these levels with three different numbers. One particular municipality identified the cost ranging from $3 to $15 million in both reduced revenue from reduced water sales as well as increased cost due to increasing advertisement campaigns as well as enforcement activities. We also estimated the lost generation in 2001 from the hydropower sector, and that estimate was around in the order of several billion dollars. And then finally, we spoke with several ski area operators, and the average visitation in 2005 dropped by 60%. So a million fewer ski visits. You can do some quick math, around $40 a ticket, that's around $40 million. And it doesn't account for economic impacts to communities, restaurants, hotels, gas stations, all the things that go along with ski operations. So we've talked a bit about impacts, and now I'm going to move on to responses. These are things identified by interviewees as things they can currently do to reduce impacts that they experience, as well as recommendations for additional information and resources that can improve their ability to adapt in the future, essentially increasing their adaptive capacity. Junior water users identified things like water law changes, and in addition to education on the current system, which would enable them to make better, more efficient water transfers, just generally do things with their water to reduce impacts, as well as reducing conveyance inefficiencies. And reducing these inefficiencies would essentially increase the supply. They also identified earlier, more accurate proration estimates, things that would give them a better idea of what sort of supply they can expect in the upcoming year, enable them to make better decisions in the early season and reduce impacts in the future. And then finally, they recommended increased storage, and this can be in the form of large reservoirs, such as the proposed Black Rock project, as well as small reservoirs, perhaps high in the Cascades. Dryland farmers, they can do things like altering their farming practices, and they recommended that they would be able to do this more effectively if they had better information in the form of forecasts. The green industry. The green industry is landscapers, landscape nurseries, both wholesale and retail, as well as turf grass industry and golf courses. And their main recommendation was for more localized supply forecasts. And these would be specific to watershed or municipality and would give their consumers a good, clear understanding of what sort of restrictions they can expect in the upcoming year. The municipal industrial sector can do things like managing their reservoirs differently, performing system maintenance such as flushing in the early spring when supply is plentiful. And they also recommended that improved forecasts very specific to their watersheds would provide them with the necessary information to actually be more effective in doing these sorts of adaptations. Fisheries agencies recommended that they or identified their ability to purchase water rights, mainly from agriculture, to keep those flows in stream, and as well as increased monitoring for stranded fish and maintenance of fisheries devices in streams that would enable them to operate at lower flows. They recommended that they would benefit from early, or do benefit from early drought declaration. It enables them to get their resources lined up in order to prepare to do these sorts of things, such as purchasing water rights before farmers get their crops in the ground. Ski areas have limited ability to respond. They can reduce their labor force. And they also recommended that improved forecasting would enable them to inform their would inform their hiring decisions so they can, again, prepare their operations in the fall prior to the ski area opening. So future and ongoing work. So currently we're working on using the knowledge that we've gained during this project and leveraging it along with discussions with drought coordinators and drought planners from other states in the U.S., primarily Western states, to learn about how their drought programs operate, as well as what they do, what's been effective for them, and what's not so effective, with the objective of improving drought preparedness here in Washington State. This can involve things like developing specific indicators for certain regions, as well as possibly drought declaration in stages and by region. You can imagine something like the Department of Homeland Security, where you have a yellow, orange, red sort of symbology that denotes what level of drought people can expect in their region. And then finally, providing better information for water users. And this is another project ongoing here in the Civil Engineering Department. You can see this graphic displays the snow water equivalent as of early February in many of the snowy regions of Washington. Now, the objective of this tool is to be able to provide more specific stream flow forecasts, as well as predict the onset and recovery from drought, and flood risk forecasts, and flood risk forecasts are really important for reservoir operations in order to know whether you can raise or lower, whether you should raise or lower the pool. And this project is being performed directly with stakeholders in order to maximize the value of the decision of the tool as a decision-making tool. So finally, I'd like to thank the Washington Department of Ecology, the Washington Department of Community, Trade, and Economic Development, and the National Science Foundation for their support, as well as the Project Advisory Committee, and my advisor, Dr. Ann Steineman, as well. Any questions? The question is, did junior water users suggest specific changes to water laws would be helpful to them? Their main suggestion was to enable the water market to act more as a true market system. Under the current system, there are market failures where the people who are willing to pay the highest price for the water aren't necessarily able to get the water, if that makes sense. Perhaps people with, say, perennial tree fruit, where if they lose their crop, it's a really significant impact, and lose their trees, it's even more significant. It could be thousands and thousands of dollars to replace them. So I guess they didn't make specific recommendations on the exact changes that they'd like to see, just that they would like it to operate more as a true market system. And the question is, did you say why weren't conservation and efficiency plans included in the analysis? As far as which sector, could you be more specific?
Well, it strikes me that conservation and the resource that actually improve efficiency Conservation was never mentioned
in any of your responses. Well, perhaps I should have highlighted it better, but I did mention that the agriculture sector recommended more efficient conveyance systems, such as using pipes instead of ditches to convey their water. Many irrigation districts have conservation plans, as well as I think all of the major municipalities as well have conservation plans. So I guess it's something I left out of my presentation, but it is a very important factor in drought mitigation and drought planning.
Rather than a question, I'd just like to elaborate on that, as far as end users are concerned in agriculture and industry, state water law since 1917 has actually penalized and still penalizes conservation by not allowing water that is conserved to be kept in the water right.
That's also a valid point. But there are tools that are available for people to take part of their water right and say if they didn't want to use it, they could allocate it to in-stream uses without being penalized and then possibly transfer it back. Yes?
You find that water suppliers that had a good campaign of alerting people to an impending drought have to spend less to deal with it later on, or was there any measurable effect? In other words, of the efforts to alert people beforehand.
Right, and the question is, were efforts to, or high quality or effective efforts to alert people beforehand effective at reducing the cost of drought? And that's not a specific question we addressed with the municipalities is, I guess, the effectiveness of their ad campaigns, but they did note that ad campaigns were effective in general at encouraging people, even just voluntary water restrictions were really effective at reducing consumption. Any other questions?